According to conventional wisdom, communism died with the fall of the Berlin Wall and the rise of the Iron Curtain. But the evidence shows otherwise. The evidence shows that communism exists not only on college campuses in the United States of America, but also in Russia. Let's take a look. This is Gary Benoit, your host for Beyond the Cover, and we have with us today Christian Gomez, who is in charge of the research department for the John Birch Society. Christian, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me on, Gary.
Well, we're delighted to have you, and of course, you wrote a really important article in the May 16 issue of the New American Magazine entitled Calculating Communists. And it's an article that has history, but it also ties to what's happening today in Europe. And, of course, the premise of the article is that communism is still alive and well. What evidence do you marshal in the article for that?
Well, yeah, like you were saying earlier in the introduction, the conventional wisdom is that when the Berlin Wall fell and when the Soviet Union officially dissolved and ceased to be, and the Soviet flag went down, the modern flag of the Russian Federation went up, that the Communist Party of the Soviet Union ceased to exist. And as a result, all actions of the Communist Party were suspended. There were even decrees made by Boris Yeltsin, the then president of the Soviet Union and then the first president of the Russian Federation, to outlaw and suspend all activities of the Communist Party of the Soviet Union, the CPSC. But what most people don't realize is that in 1993, the CPRF was born, the Communist Party of the Russian Federation. And also in March of 93 was born a new party. Well, actually, it wasn't a new party, but what was born was the Union of Communist Parties, Communist Party of the Soviet Union, the UCP-CPSU, which actually is the official, it is the official successor to the old CPSU. The CPSU never officially dissolved. They had a congress of their Communist Party in March of 1993, officially changed their name to the UCP-CPSU, and they still exist today. And their purpose today is twofold. One, the UCP-CPSU oversees the activities of all of the official communist parties that exist, and not just the Russian Federation, but all of the other former Soviet republics that once made up the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics. And the CPRF is specifically the Communist Party of the Russian Federation. And it's still active today. It's the second largest political party in Russia. The largest one is United Russia, which is Putin's party. But the Communist Party always comes in second place in presidential elections, and they're highly influential. And unlike in the U.S., where you might see, oh, the Republican Party is in power at one point, and the Democrats are the opposition, or the Democrats are in power, and the Republicans are the opposition, in Russian politics, Kennedy Zaganov, this is the leader of the Russian Communist Party, and also of the Union of Communist Parties, Communist Party of the Soviet Union, he is considered the leader of the opposition Communist Party faction in the Duma, or the lower branch of the Russian Federal Assembly, which is their Congress.
Right.
But in reality, Gennady Zaganov is more of an ally, as I discuss in the article, than an actual opposition leader, where you have Putin showering gifts to Gennady Zaganov when it's his birthday. And these aren't just like little tokens. These are pretty nice, prestigious gifts and awards he's given him, praising him for his contributions to the Russian government for the last 30-plus years and his service on Russian foreign policy.
So basically, whoever you vote for on the ballot, you're voting for Communist A versus Communist B.
Yeah, the way I like to describe the situation in Russia today is that while Putin may not officially be a member of the Communist Party today, he was a member of the Communist Party of the Soviet Union until it officially ceased to be known by that name. But I would say that Putin is the ruling false opposition to communism. because Putin has never shed away his Marxist-Leninist beliefs. He may have shed the more atheistic-sounding rhetoric because he'll claim he's Christian with the Russian Orthodox Church and have rhetoric that sounds a bit more conservative. But if he truly was an anti-communist, if he was really the anti-communist leader, or even Boris Yeltsin even, if he was also an anti-communist, then would they not have had Nuremberg-style trials to decommunize Russia and to remove these communists from power? You know that when there's a real opposition leader who's a potential threat to Putin, whether it's a political leader or someone in the media trying to expose some corruption connected to Putin, or even an ex-KGB or ex-FSB agent who tries to spill the beans on the inner workings of the Kremlin and the FSB, those individuals typically end up missing or assassinated. Yet Gennady Zaganov, the long-standing opposition leader, his influence has not waned. It's only gotten stronger and stronger, and Putin never touches him, invites him over to the Kremlin. They have meetings together quite often. If he was truly anti-communist, then Gennady Zaganov would not be alive. But yet he is alive. Well, and he has Putin's ear.
And Putin specifically came out of the former Soviet KGB, which was an organization. It was equivalent, I would say, to the Gestapo in Nazi Germany. In fact, perhaps even worse, it had a much longer lifespan and was responsible for the torturing and killing of many innocent people, millions of innocent people. And yet Putin came out of that organization. We never hear about that, do we?
Well, you do hear about that. I mean, a little bit. There was the time when George W. Bush said, "I saw into Putin's eyes and I saw a man's soul." And then when John McCain campaigned for president, trying to get little brownie points with conservatives, McCain made a joke about that and said, "When I looked into Putin's eyes, I saw three letters, KGB," and he got all these, hoorahs from the crowd. Mm-hmm. So it's brought up from time to time. But, when the mainstream media talks about Putin, they describe him and his government as a fascist government, which is interesting because Putin refers to NATO, the West, right. Zelensky, Ukraine, the U.S. and U.K. as being the fascists. He accuses us of spreading Nazism in Russia, and that's the same. Oh, sorry, in Ukraine, I mean to say, and that's the same kind of rhetoric that Antifa uses. Antifa always uses the fascist card and the Nazi card. Now, whether true or not, that's not the point. But the point I'm just bringing up is just that the tactics used by Antifa are not very different than the same tactics used by Putin, just on a global geopolitical scale.
Well, what are the communists trying to accomplish today? And, well, first of all, why did they go underground, so to speak? They never really left, but they de-emphasize certainly the name communism. Why do they do that, and what is their agenda today?
Well, I subscribe to the theory of Anatoly Galitsyn, who wrote the two books, New Lies for Old and the Perestroika Deception. And in those books, this Anatoly Galitsyn, I guess I have to explain who he was just briefly. Mm-hmm. He was one of the highest ranking members of the Soviet KGB in Department, I believe it was Department D, which dealt with long range deception strategies for Moscow. He defected in the 1960s and wrote a book with the permission of the CIA entitled New Lies for Old. And in that book, he made hundreds of predictions, including the reunification of Germany, the rise of what he called Eurocommunism, and that Europe would eventually be neutralized, and that it would look as though you would see a strategic retreat, where it would look as though the Soviet Union was no more, but then eventually they would come back in full force, together linked up with China, and there would be a second socialist October Revolution, he described it as. That's the word he used. That's the phrase he used in the book, The Perestroika Deception, after some of the events that he said in the first book started to come to pass. And, of course, we've seen the rise of the European Union, which Gorbachev described as a near European Soviet.
Yes.
And you look at the politics of the EU, the socialists and the leftist blocs essentially control the European Union. Even some of the so-called right-wing parties, like Angela Merkel, she's actually considered a right-leaning politician, or at least she was. She's no longer in power. You have Scholz now, who's an outright socialist in Germany. But even Merkel, the supposed right-leaning prime minister of Germany, or sorry, chancellor of Germany, if she was in the U.S., she would comfortably fit in the Bernie Sanders wing of the Democratic Party, and she is considered right-leaning in German politics. So what we see now is a resurgence of this Euro-communism, this socialism creeping up through all of Europe, and Europe is becoming more neutralized in the sense that it's no longer this active anti-communist bloc ideologically. Europe's becoming more secular. It's moving away from God in every single country. Sadly, it doesn't matter if you look at the England with the Anglican Church, or you look at Italy with the Roman Catholic Church, if you look at Germany with some of the Lutheran churches. Like, the entire continent is just shifting away from its traditional Judeo-Christian roots and moving more to secularism. And of course, Moscow may seem like it's embracing a church revival, but what we're really seeing in Moscow is a revival in old Soviet glory, and that's what that's why both Putin and Gennady Zaganov, both in different occasions, said that the collapse of the Soviet Union was one of the greatest geopolitical disasters, and that created a void in European and global security. And what they want to bring back is the old Soviet Union. They want to do so under the banner of free trade with something brand new called the Eurasian Economic Union. And this is an attempt where it, on the outside, it looks like Russia's version of the EU. Free trade looks all polished and clean, but it's all between the former Soviet republics to recreate that same space. And when you look at the official charter of the UCP, CPSU, Union of Communist Parties, Communist Party Soviet Union from 1983 to today, their main objective is to reintegrate economically and militarily and politically that former space, to bring back the Soviet Union as a new Eurasian customs union, and eventually have the communists lead it, control it, so they will come back to power. There will be a Soviet Union in the future. It may have a different name, but that's their goal. And regarding Russia and China, well, we have an organization that no one talks about in the West called the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, right, the SCO, which is Russia and China, a Sino-Soviet axis. They are linked together in a military alliance, and that's already the case. And this is why Lavrov, the foreign minister, Putin's foreign minister currently, he said that we're going to have a new world order with China's, in Russia with China, that we're going to lead a new world order. In fact, if you go to the foreign ministry building in Russia, which is this tall, gorgeous-looking building, but in terms of the architecture, but the very top, the hammer and sickle is still there. Whereas in Germany in 1945, they were dynamiting, blowing up the swastikas from government buildings. The hammer and sickle is still proudly displayed on the foreign ministry building in Moscow to this very day as we speak. It's up there right now, which shows you that ideologically their foreign policy remains the same old Soviet foreign policy. And that's why Putin gave an award to Gennady Zaganov, and one of the awards he gave him was one of Russia's highest awards, where he gave him this particular award. It's in the magazine, of course. He gave him this particular award in honor of his contributions to the foreign policy of Russia. So what is the foreign policy objective right now? We see Putin going into Russia. Part of that motivation is to bring Ukraine from the Russian point of view. They want to bring it back officially into their fold because they want to recreate the new Soviet Union under the Eurasian Economic Union banner. And as far as all of the communists are concerned, Ukraine is to them very valuable and strategic. And they believe or feel and have said multiple times throughout history that there can be, even Gorbachev once said, back in 1981, there can be no union, as in the Soviet Union or a new Soviet Union, there can be no union at all without Ukraine. So from the communist point of view, they need Ukraine. That's why you see these communist governments, actually, in the Donbass region. They're essentially Marxist-Leninist governments that are there in those breakaway republics. And Putin's goal is to install a pro-Putin puppet instead of the pro-Western deep state puppet that we have, and that such a puppet would likely be heavily tied with the Communist Party of Ukraine, which right now is officially abolished. But if Putin comes in back, if he takes over Ukraine, he will reinstate the Communist Party of Ukraine and put in a puppet who will be friendly to the Communist Party, just like the guy right now in Belarus, Lukashenko. Mm-hmm. He's not a member of the Communist Party, but he's supported in his country's government by both the Communist Party of Belarus, and Gennady Zaganov is very good friends with President Alexander Lukashenko of Belarus.
Do you see a battle taking place right now between the Western insiders? And by Western insiders, I'm referring to the deep state, let's say in the United States, the equivalent of that in, let's say, Western Europe, versus the communist leaders. Are they fighting over who will control the New World Order, or do you think at the top they're really working together?
I think there is some real infighting between mm-hmm. them in the sense of like there's a little bit of pride. The goal is the same, a one world government, right. And eventually that one world government, for there to be one, obviously Russia and the U.S. and the EU and Ukraine and the U.K., Japan, and all of this has to be under the same banner. But how do we get there? One way could be militarily just conquer everyone who isn't you and impose your regime on the rest. People have tried that before. You know, Hitler tried it, Napoleon have tried that. That didn't work. The best way if they're going to do that is through cooperation. There's going to be an east-west convergence. And Galitzin talked about it, mm-hmm. in New Lies for All and in the Perestroika deception. So I do believe that there is some pride as to I want to be in charge of the New World Order versus he wants to be in charge. But ultimately, at the end, they really are working more together than not. There's some little right. petty infighting, but don't let that distract you, because George Soros, who has ties with the Ukrainian government, at least with the previous mm-hmm. Ukrainian president, not Zelensky, but the one right before him, who was a pro-Western puppet, Soros was really heavily behind it. But Soros has also said he wants China to lead the New World Order. And China, in this current conflict in the Ukraine, is they may be trying to sound neutral publicly mm-hmm. in their statements, but they're really on Putin's side.
Right.
China's position, preference is that Ukraine is fully taken over by Russia. So when everyone praises China in this, even Biden was talking about trying to wedge China away. The fact that they put so much emphasis on China shows you where this is headed. They want China to be a leading factor in the New World Order. So ultimately, they're working more together than not. And in the goal, eventually, what we're going to see probably is Putin and the West take us to the brink of nuclear war, probably to the very, very brink, where it looks like it's going to happen, get in that bomb shelter, but then it won't happen. Hopefully, it won't be the case, mm-hmm. right? But then they'll use the fear of the imminent crisis to bring about a new, probably global treaty. They'll use the fear of nuclear war, like they did all throughout the Cold War, mad, mutually assured destruction, to impose probably a new integration scheme. And Putin has said many times that the objective of even the Eurasian Economic Union is to have a singular free trade agreement or treaty between all the way from the coast of France and Portugal mm-hmm. all the way to the most eastern part of Russia that practically right. borders by Alaska, north of Japan.
One final question. What can the American people do about this?
Well, what the American people should do is read the New American magazine mm-hmm. to understand the full geopolitical landscape. Because a lot of Americans seem to fall into the trap of, well, you know, if Putin's fighting against Biden and the deep state and Zelensky, then Putin must be good. Or you could fall into the reverse trap. Well, I know that Putin's totally a KGB mm-hmm. communist thug, so he's a bad guy. So in this case, maybe I should support Zelensky or Biden in this one instance. And that is distraction. We need to cut through that and see through that and recognize that both sides are working towards socialism. And if we can expose that together, then hopefully we can help stop it and not be hoodwinked, so to speak, by Washington or by Moscow.
Right.
So the New American Magazine is valuable, because this issue of the magazine has a great article by Alex Newman that focuses on exposing the Zelensky side, but we're not one-sided. We're looking at the problems on both sides, and my article focuses a lot on not so much Putin per se, but Gennady Zaganov, the leader of Russia's Communist Party, that probably most Americans, maybe even most Europeans, have never even heard of that guy's name mm-hmm. Too much. So it's important that we know these things because the other side, the deep state here especially, they rely on our ignorance to impose globalism on us.
Thank you very much, Christian. We really appreciate your being on this program. And, of course, we encourage our viewers to click on the link in the description for this video to be able to get the May 16 issue of the New American Magazine that contains Christian's article, Calculating Communists. Thank you very much.